The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the Life Tips Show, everyone. Byron White here, your host. I'm here with Katie Farber. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Right on. You're the author of Why Great Teachers Quit and How We Might Stop the Exodus. We're very excited to chat with this incredibly challenging problem. Tell us about the book, when you published it, what incredible spirit you must be bringing to the table with this particular problem.
Oh, well, I've been teaching since my 11th year of teaching right now that I'm in, and I teach 5th and 6th grade, and I had a fabulous teacher that I was mentoring. She was in her second year teaching, and I had been working with her all year, and you know, I'd seen her in and out of stressful situations, and I'd seen her really working hard, and it was clear to me she was born to be a teacher. She was amazing. She had my pre-adolescent students doing things like making homemade instruments and singing out loud and dancing, and she was incredible. She worked well with parents and with colleagues, and I was thrilled to have her. And in fact, I was looking forward to my two young daughters having her someday. So I was really stunned when, at the end of that year, she said she wasn't coming back, and in fact, she was leaving teaching altogether. So I was devastated by that whole thing, and so was the community. So I sort of pulled back and started researching teacher attrition, and I quickly learned that one in three teachers quit in 3 years, and that it moves up to 50% and higher in the first 5 years, particularly in a high poverty, low-performing schools. And so I thought, we have to look for answers here. Are there more people like my friend Abby, and what's going on? So I started talking to friends of mine that had quit, and then colleagues, and friends of friends. And before I knew it, I ended up having a set of interview questions, and I really started to look into literature and thinking about solutions. And then I found a publisher, and it took off from there.
Now, I want our guests to just know that you're also the author of the popular Green Parenting blog called Non-Toxic Kids. You've also been featured in the Washington Post, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, the Toronto Star, EnviroBlog, Terrain Magazine. So we're really honored to have you on the show. But
thank you so
if
much.
You were to answer that one question, namely, how might we stop the exodus? Can we just begin our discussion with the complexities of how to stop this problem?
Yes, I absolutely think the clear message is that we've got to be thinking about teacher sustainability, and I haven't heard many people talking about the fact that most of America's teachers right now feel like they're treading water, and people keep throwing bricks at them, and they just have to hold them, and they have to continue to tread water, and surely the bricks are regional. It depends on where you live and the challenges that are in that particular school and community, but the overwhelming sense that I got from every teacher that I listened to was that there's more and more they're being asked to do, and particularly now with our financial situation nationwide, with less and less. And this just leads to really unhealthy things, unhealthy teachers, people quitting. You know, it's not a good situation, and I think it's one of the things that we really have to look at to improve education from the inside out. We've really got to be listening to the teachers and what they need.
Mm-hmm. And do you have... In your research, in your studies, did you review any other countries that are handling education in a different way, or have any basis for which us to compare our seemingly pathetic educational systems here in the U.S.? Have you studied any of the other programs abroad?
I did. I looked at just some of the higher performing European countries and learned that the U.S., interestingly, has more time, direct time teaching, and less time collaborating and doing professional development on a daily basis. Oh. And that's where we really need to move towards is school-embedded, you know, professional development that gets teachers what they need, but does it within a school day. And I've seen that's happening in other countries, and it seems to be working a lot better where they're doing professional development that matters to them, but it's not another add-on. So it's not an evening class that takes away from their health or their family time. It's built into their day, and maybe their days are a little bit longer, you know, that we've got to be considering all of these things. But I do know there's a school out in California that has 90 minutes of built-in collaboration time a day. And what that is, it changes on a daily basis, I'm sure, on a weekly basis, based on what the student need is and what the curriculum needs are. But they have this built-in time where they can actually do this work together. And I just marvel at how much could be accomplished if you had that kind of time every day. What kind of curriculum could you actually develop that led from one year to the next that was really comprehensive or behaviors that, you know, as a student that you were concerned about, you could bring it to some experts and they could help you figure it out. This kind of work is real and meaningful, and teachers just don't have the time to do it on a daily basis.
I mean, some of the problems, of course, are you know, longevity and motivating teachers to stay. But are there other problems? Are teachers burning out? Are they just frustrated with the existing systems? Is it a monetary issue? What do you think some of the reasons for the exodus really are?
Okay, so what I did is I interviewed people via phone and in person, and also on two different blogs that I had set up. One was for teachers who had quit, and one was for teachers who were staying to get some of their advice and ideas. And I broke it out into standardized testing culture, working conditions, ever higher expectations, bureaucracy, and respect and compensation. I put together in one chapter because to me they seem to walk hand in hand. Parents and administrators and school boards. Those are the topics. Now, certainly those aren't exhaustive, but those are the ones that I heard told to me in many different ways over and over again during this process.
So, again, I want to ask that question. Is it a reward problem? Is it a monetary problem? Were you able to pinpoint, you know, the reasons for teachers, you know, wanting to leave the profession, or is it just leaving the school system, by the way, or, you know, and how many, so maybe we could just get a feel for why people are leaving. Is there a pinpoint that you could have on it?
Well, it's, you know, I really did feel like it varied depending on situations, because you look at a state like New York, you know, they're, I think, second or third in the nation for pay, and some of the people that I interviewed from over there in New York were saying that their respect, they felt really valued in their communities, and they could actually live in the towns in which they teach. They just sort of felt that they were able to even be better because of their increased compensation. So there's that piece. But then certainly in New York, I'm sure in other urban areas, you have working conditions challenges. So somebody in New York, maybe in urban, you know, in New York City, might say that, you know, it's the violence in their schools that drove them out, particularly the growing trauma of violence against their but somebody in maybe, you know, my state of Vermont is, I think it's 30-something for teacher pay. And maybe that's, you know, that's another person's reason is that they're in the middle of the road or lower, and they're just not feeling like they can make ends meet with teaching. So I really feel like it varies, but I do feel like there's that sense of being overwhelmed and being overcommitted and trying to do too much with too little that pervades teachers nationwide. It varies on what the particular situation is because, you know, state to state and school to school, it's so different.
You've got some fantastic tips that are going to address those problems, and I can't wait to get to them. But I've got another, of course, I'm like a curious cat over here and ask often difficult questions, so I'll keep carrying on if you can endure it. But one of the questions is public versus private. Did you find any discrepancy of problems that were common amongst, or did you see the same thing happening in public versus private schools?
Well, I really did focus, since I'm a public school teacher and, you know, the study, I really did focus on public schools because that's where my real interest lies in that and really looking at our public school system and how to make it work better and make teaching more sustainable. So I really just focused on public schools.
And you use the word great in your title, why great teachers quit. Did you find, in fact, that a higher percentage of you know, let's call them more famous and more popular, or whatever, however we want to define great. I guess that's an interesting philosophical debate we could have as well. But
definitely.
But But is it the case that in fact the great teachers, the high achievers, the high performers are in fact leaving at an alarming pace? Was that part of the conclusion?
Well, one of the beginnings of this whole project was I came across a little data segment, a little data point that made me really stop and think about this particular idea. And it was just a piece of evidence that was from the Research and Development Institute that came out in 2004, and it said that teachers who do make a speedy exit from teaching have a greater measured ability, and certainly we could debate what that greater measured ability is. But once I found that and I thought about, you know, of course, anecdotally, the friend and colleague that I had who quit, I'm thinking that teachers who leave might have had higher expectations for what the career would be like and have the potential to be great, as most teachers do, with time and training. So it is a little bit subjective, but I did find some data to point to that, and that was actually one of the things that got me started on the whole project.
Very interesting, huh? Well, I want to take a quick break with everybody here and then come back with some great tips that you have for hoping to stop people from leaving this incredibly important, critical role that we have in our, frankly, our overall society. So back in just a minute, everybody, with some great tips and advice for anybody even thinking about the teaching profession or within the teaching profession. Back with you in a minute, everybody. Thanks for listening in.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Our clients have earned over $1 billion. Now it's your turn. With over 20,000 products to promote across a huge variety of niches, ClickBank provides countless ways for any affiliate to make money. You can promote any product immediately. No contracts required. Looking for recurring commissions? Upsell products? ClickBank's got them. And best of all, you can make up to 75% commissions. Ready to become the next ClickBank success story? Sign up now for free at ClickBank.com.
Hey, Joel Kahm here, and I want you to hear something. That's my ka-ching button, and it's the universal sound of success. Sounds good, doesn't it? How would you like to hear that ka-ching sound all the time? In my new book, Ka-ching, How to Run an Online Business That Pays and Pays, I lay out a strategy and a plan for you to create your own online success. Get your copy today at kachingbook.com, and I'll give you a ka-ching button for free. All the details are there at kachingbook.com. That's kachingbook.com.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
CEO Coach, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Culture and Business Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
We're back with Katie Farber, author of Why Great Teachers Quit and How We Might Stop the Exodus. Katie, help us out. Help us save this important part of our culture here. You know, can you offer some tips and advice to the readers on to the listeners, and perhaps readers, we'll talk about that later when we can learn more about how to get a hold of you and your current publishing online and even some of these tips that we may or may not be able to get to. But can you walk us through some absolutely fabulous tips that you've put together for the show on hoping to make things happen?
Absolutely. I think that it depends on what sort of audience you're looking at. As far as for parents, I have some really clear tips. I feel like educating yourself, if you're the parent of a school-aged child, as much as you can about what's going on at the school, with reading the parent handbook and the newsletters and the websites, and making sure that you're staying up with what's going on at the school and showing up for parent conferences and being on time and respectful and collaborative. And what's really important to remember, too, is if you have something you're really concerned about, try to contact the teacher before the principal. Try to work something out at the classroom level, because that's going to make things feel a lot more respectful than if somebody goes right ahead to the principal with something that could be really handled in the classroom. So that's helpful tip, yeah. Unless it's something egregious, you know, something really terrible.
I want to ask you a question about that. Sorry to interrupt, but and I know that's not even really officially the number one tip. But do you think, in the end of the day, that parents should take a dose of responsibility on teacher satisfaction and happiness? You know, is there a role and a responsibility that parents need to play in this?
Oh, I really think so. I think we've seen really extremes of parent over-involvement or parent under-involvement. Mm. I mean, there's been reports in the media of, you know, helicopter parenting and those kind of things. And certainly, I heard a lot about that in my interviews. Parents emailing 300-page attachments and expecting the teacher to read them, you know, within the hour, or coming in the middle of the day and, you know, demanding to talk to the teacher about a problem when they're in the middle of teaching. Lots of situations where there's just not that collaborative team spirit. And I think what has to happen is for parents and teachers to realize they're both on the same team. We're working together to benefit the child, and to really keep that in mind with everything we say and do about school. You know, being positive about school, asking and checking in on progress, asking about the child's day, and keeping it light and lively about the teacher, you know, and what they're studying, and really trying to foster positivity, because I think it's easy to sort of slip into a negative sort of blame game type of role, and I think the media also supports that in some ways too. So I think if having that collaborative spirit is key, and also trying to be informed of what's going on with what's coming home. Because the teacher should be doing a good job of sending home newsletters and curricular items and all sorts of stuff that's happening at the school level. And it's super helpful if parents read it and certainly email or call with questions. But the tricky thing is, a lot of teachers have a tough time even trying to find time to use the bathroom. And things like that. So trying to make sure that it might take a day or so to get back to them. And things like that. Also, you know, really looking at supporting full mentoring programs. This is another, if we're thinking about how to keep teachers in the classroom. You know, there's mentoring programs like the one that I participated in. I think to myself, if it was a little bit more comprehensive, and she was able to meet with another music teacher on a regular basis, might that have helped support her to stay in the classroom?
I want to keep us on point and on track. Let's go down through the first tip that I have here: establish routine. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. When families, it's really important to establish a family routine, such as including healthy eating and sleeping habits. It's so important for students and for children to get enough sleep and to get good food. I mean, studies are showing that kids are not getting enough sleep. They're having, you know, late nights, and they're having changes in meal times and maybe not very healthy foods. A lot of times I'm learning about students having TVs in their room or to a lot of exposure to media. So just establishing a really consistent routine is crucial to school success.
Build self-esteem.
Well, that's when I'm circling back to that point I made earlier, but being building the child's self-esteem by expressing interest in the child's schoolwork and affirming the child's worth through positive messages. So being interested and positive about school, asking about subjects, not generally, how was school today? Because we all know the response is going to be great, good, fine, okay. But asking, how was math today? I know you were working on fractions. Or how was art? I know you were working on that painting. So being specific enough that you can actually try to have a conversation, and they know that you care about their success.
Mm-hmm. And number three, communicate.
Yep, this is what I was talking about with communicating openly with the school and making sure that they know what's going on at home and that you know what's going on at school, and approaching your child's teacher instead of going up to the principal first, looking at newsletters and websites, and really realizing that teachers are teaching all day, and so they're going to try hard to get back to you probably at the end of the day or the next day.
If things are going beautifully, footnote on that, if things are going beautifully with the parent and the teacher, and the student and the teacher, You know, should you communicate for the sake of communication? Is that your opinion? And just make the teacher aware. And at what point within, like, you know, when kids are entering high school, for example, it's fairly uncool for parents to get involved with students. I would think, at least that's the perception I have. You know, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I think that they're going to present that they don't want teachers and parents to be talking in high school, but I think secretly inside that they probably would like let's say a high school student's doing really well in an English class, you know, a call home from a teacher to a parent about that would be terrific, even if the teenage student just shrugs, because inside they're probably thinking, you know, hey, all right, that's just a positive reinforcement for doing something good. I think it's very powerful. I mean, I know when I get messages, sometimes I get messages from parents that want to come and volunteer, and they'll just say a sentence or so like, well, you know, she's having a great year and she's really enjoying the science unit or something. And it's just really powerful. It's something that teachers don't hear a lot, and it really does make a difference.
That's really interesting and very insightful. So we as parents need to wake up. Let's go to number four, set realistic standards.
Yes, when I interviewed a lot of people, it was clear that some parents, they were just going to really put a lot of pressure on the teacher and the child if they didn't get an A in this particular subject or whatever it was. And, it's really easy to have too high or even too low standards for your child. It's really hard to find that right point. But just behaviorally checking in with the child and saying, did you get a reminder today? Or how did lunch go today? I know it was hard the other day when you had to move your seat. You know, really saying that our family has, you know, these high standards for behavior and we think school is really important. But then not getting into an unhealthy sort of pressure type relationship. So really thinking about what is realistic for this child. And there's lots of great resources to help with that. There's great books that say, there's a series of books called Touch Points. And it looks at each age level and tells you what they're working on cognitively, emotionally, physically, and where you should expect them to be. It's a really great place to look so you can know what is realistic for a child this age.
I am headed to Amazon after this interview to pick up that book. I need that for my son.
I do too, actually.
read aloud.
I look at mine a lot.
I'm sorry, check homework.
Oh, yes. Yep. I run into this a lot with students. It's really important that you don't just say, hey, did you do your homework? But ask to see it. Actually see it, to hold it, to look at it, and to review it with them. Even though they might sigh, roll their eyes, shrug at you, it does show them a commitment to it and that they're not just going to take the easy road, which is to just say they've done it and then to not have done it. So really just engaging in a dialogue about it. It doesn't have to take a long time. It could be just a 5-minute review, but I think it's crucial.
And do you think this is also crucial from the teacher's perspective?
Oh, absolutely.
Or is this all about the teacher's perspective? I mean, are teachers assuming that their parents are checking their homework and, you know, setting realistic standards and communicating effectively? I mean, isn't that the point, I guess, of all of this?
Yes, it is the point of all of this. I mean,
okay.
we're hopeful that this is happening, but a lot of the time we realize that it's not, and we need to say it in a lot of places. So as a teacher, I definitely write in some of my early letters home in the year some of these guidelines and suggestions for homework. But I do have a lot of folks that'll say, oh, yeah, you know, he did it or they did it, but they have no idea how it was done, if it was even done correctly or if at all. I think it's really critical also an agenda book where the kids are writing down exactly what they need to do in what day. That's another piece that parents can be checking and that teachers are checking at school.
Interesting, though, because they're, you know, obviously we can tell you're just very simply a great teacher. Of course, I don't know that I haven't sat in any of your classrooms, but I can tell that you are. But isn't that part of the secret, perhaps, is setting the expectations both for students and for parents to make your life as a teacher happier? Isn't there an obligation, and is that perhaps some of the reasons that we have some pain points here? What are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. No, I absolutely agree with that. I think that it's easy when you have parents working several jobs, they're on late schedules, it's easy to not do some of this stuff. It really is. And it can be overwhelming. I fully acknowledge that. But I think it's really critical to not only the success of the student, but also to the longevity of the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I have some major homework to do. Okay, so utilize the community. Talk with us about that.
Well, you know, I urge listeners to think about the fact that a public school, you know, really can do a lot of things, but it really can't do it all. And especially with what's going on with budgets, you know, some schools don't have any field trips this year or they're cutting certain programs. So it's really going to be up to the parents to look at that, to develop the enrichment, you know, to look at community learning opportunities, to expose your child to the library, to museums, to the theater, as much as you can. And a lot of those things, if you look carefully at your community calendar, a lot of them are free or have a small cost. And even after-school clubs, you know, those are usually subsidized a bit so that they're pretty affordable. And there's lots of things that kids can do, but I also urge listeners to think about not over-scheduling kids because I do see that a lot as well. And I think that leads to some stress and some lack of sleep and a sense of being overwhelmed pretty early.
Monitor activities.
Yep, this is an interesting, you hear sometimes from your child, oh, you know, well, Billy gets to do this or at this activity. You know, that maybe it's a school performance and the kids are running around outside during it. It's really important that parents say, you know, our family expects this, or we value this and we're not going to do that. My expectation is that you're going to sit here during this performance and not run around in the library or something with your friends. So it takes a little more hands-on approach from the parents, and that can be really, really hard to handle. You want to go and talk to your friends or you want to do something else, but it's really a good idea to keep an eye on what's going on, what your child is doing, where they are, who they're with, and what are your expectations for them at that time.
Mm-hmm. Learn at home, number 9.
Yeah, this is modeling learning at home is really critical when you're either just playing word games or showing that you're reading the newspaper or magazines, discussing current events. If you let them see you reading, writing, and doing math, they're going to learn vocabulary from this. They're going to learn word usage. They're going to be exposed to just numbers. I was reading a study that talked about just hearing numbers and units is just like literacy and learning language. They are developing their math language. So if they hear you say 100% or you're even puzzling out some math, you're trying to figure out 20% off of $50 or something. If they hear you doing that, their math language is going to grow and their success in math is going to grow.
Wow, absolutely amazing. I had not even begun to thought about linguistics and learning. Wow, that just blows me away. Number 10, volunteer. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. Today I had hoped to have a parent had called me to volunteer in the classroom, and I was really hoping that she could because I was planning on doing a science lab. And a lot of teachers don't have extra people in the classroom. So if they're going to do something really hands-on and innovative that mm-hmm. we want to be doing in public schools, mm-hmm. then it's really helpful to have some parent volunteers to come into the classroom. Mm-hmm. So this is it could be a call that parents could make, and they could say, is there any help that you need with anything that you're doing? And it could be a hike, it could be a field trip, it could be a lab. And that's just a great way to see how your child is interacting and to also be really helpful to the teacher. So I would recommend that. And it's also just having your child see you doing things like acts of kindness, you know, bringing a dinner over to a new mom or to somebody who's injured. You know, just having your student really see, the child really see the parent doing acts of kindness and support for the community is going to make a really big difference. And it can be anything the family has an interest in. But I think volunteering at the school level, if possible, and in the community, can really set a good example.
Do you have any advice as we close out the session for remote parents like myself that are my son actually lives in Colorado, and I live in Boston here, and so do you have any thoughts on helping to foster his educational growth? He's in high school now, but I can share some stories with some of the listeners on some fun things I have done in the past. But and B, just sort of how to handle this remote stage and what that could mean for a teacher, you know, to have this remote dad reaching out saying, hey, great job, I hear, you know. Do you have any thoughts on that, on how I might be able to help the situation for both teachers and my son?
Absolutely. I was thinking that one of the tips that we skipped was reading aloud. And I was just thinking if your son was younger, Skyping, which is that online video mm-hmm. communication, I've heard of lots of parents in that situation where they would read aloud to their child over Skype, via Skype, particularly if you have maybe a middle grade or younger child, that can be a really powerful way to check in with your child, maybe even every day, where you read the goodnight book, via Skype. But since your son is older, it might be more of a maybe you're Skyping to talk about the game, how did he play that day, or what book he's reading right now for literacy class, or maybe getting that face-to-face contact would be really powerful, and you could do some of that checking in about school in that kind of conversation.
Right.
Also, I'm sure that the school, I'm not sure if they have a blog or a website where they're posting.
They do,
that are going on, keeping up with something like that, and having a lot of online communication. I'm sure since he's a teenager, he's probably really into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a good place to stay more in close touch, in a way that we're, just getting used to, I guess.
Mm-hmm. When he was in, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I would always, when I went out to visit, when it was always an ordeal, I'd pick him up on Fridays and then head up to the mountains, typically on the weekend. But I would always go in the morning and go to school. And he had, several great teachers over the time, and there was always open, invitation for me to come in. And I found the connection point was with magic tricks, strangely enough. magic tricks are great opportunities to present and to learn and to actually tell some of the kids how the tricks are done, which, turned out to be an interesting experience as well. So that was always the connection point I had within schools. And it just got the kids excited for one of the dads to show up. Like, when is your dad showing up again to do tricks, Colby?
So I bet they loved it.
They went nuts over it. It was always popular. And then I did some internet stuff as well. I mean, I'm in the .com business myself, obviously. So I did a lot of reviews of cool, hip websites that the kids could go check out to try to get them excited about the internet and the web, and some really interesting sites that had statistical information and, factual, stuff. And so, those are just, opportunities where I was able to chime in. But having heard everything you said, I'm thinking more of the teachers now and how they enjoyed that, and how they embraced the thought that here was a guy that cared about his kid and always had positive things to say about the teachers. And those are the little subtleties, let's hope, that more people need to do more of, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, providing levity, it's and delight in learning and in community and engaging. Just the fact that you went and did that brought, sunshine and levity, possibly. Maybe they were taking a standardized test later in the day, or maybe that teacher was heading off to a school board meeting where they're discussing cutting one of her colleagues' jobs. I mean, that's the reality right now in schools, and it can be quite stressful for teachers not only to manage, the home lives and the students and their varying needs, which is what they went into teaching for, but now there's all this other stuff.
Yeah.
That seems to combine, and like I was saying with the whole, treading water analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so these little things that we can do, they might seem really small, but for a teacher, they don't really get a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it just really can be supportive and uplifting.
Well, this has been really an eye-opener, certainly for me, and I know the listeners as well. Let's hope there are great teachers out listening to this as we speak right now. that are maybe a little bit more encouraged and maybe empowered now to try to help dumb parents like me that just do not understand the intricacies of what the needs are at their various stages of career development, because that's the weakness here, is that we make the assumption that all teachers are happy teaching and everything's great and they're being compensated fairly and all as well. But that's really not what's happening, obviously, when we hear these devastating statistics.
Mm-hmm.
So in closing, how's the book going? And have you gotten some positive feedback from teachers at least? And have you been able to recruit that wonderful teacher back into your school system?
No, I haven't. She was one of the first people who I drove the book over to as soon as I opened the box, though. but I actually found that, I've been going on to a lot of different radio shows, and And I kept thinking, sort of waiting for somewhat of an ambush. But all these teachers keep calling in, former teachers, and parents, and very supportive, and just realizing what's happening with education, and realizing what's happening with teaching, and feeling like they're relieved that somebody's talking about it, and that somebody's trying to bring it up as teacher sustainability as an issue, as mm-hmm. something that we need to be considering along with everything else. It seems like there's some real relief. A definite interest in it, but I'm a full-time teacher, so it is hard for me to do a lot of work on promoting it. You know, I do some interviews from at home at night, and I have a website for the book. I also have another book about service learning coming out sometime this month. So I have a lot of online things going on as far as reviews for the book. You can find at the website. I did have a really nice review in Edweek .org. And that was a really great one. One of the points that I really enjoyed about that piece was that it was talking about the race to the top. I don't know if you heard about the school mm-hmm. funding from the Obama administration, but states had to apply for the race to the top grants. And one of the reviewers of my book said, "Well, why couldn't we have tied some teacher sustainability issues to the race to the top grant?" So that if you met certain levels of collaboration in a day, or certain levels for respect and compensation or support, and that they got more points for that, and they were able to earn more for their states, that would have been really powerful. It seems like a little bit of a missed opportunity.
Is your quick take, and I could just talk with you seemingly for hours, but is your quick take that we do need to overhaul and revamp the entire compensation package and the reward package, for teachers in general?
Well, it's so tricky. I mean, it's so tricky based on where you live, what kind of compensation you're going to get, and it's such a struggle. I know here in my state of Vermont, it's a real struggle because it feels like a contentious relationship between taxpayers and teachers every time that we're voting on a school budget. And I just wish it didn't have to be this way. I really think we should be looking at different ways of funding education so it really builds community instead of takes away from it.
And have you ever entertained the concepts of sponsorship of children and helping to fund education and taking super bright minds and using the academic community as a recruiting ground for companies and corporations to helping to fund the academic system? Is that ever something you could ever imagine?
Well, I sort of get very anxious and nervous about the whole comparison of education to the business world because, we're not making trinkets or, keychains or something. You know, when you try to sort of use business models with education, it just doesn't work because every day, every child is different. Some are coming in hungry. Some are coming in from an unsafe situation. Some are coming in and they're blossoming and just maybe their math knowledge. And, we've got to try to meet them where they are. It's not something you can predict pretty on a daily basis, on a minute-to-minute basis even.
And do you feel likewise there's danger in letting, big branding companies get their brands in front of students and
oh, absolutely.
Begin... Yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, just think about media and exposure to commercialization. I mean, these children already have loads of it in their lives.
Yeah.
I really don't think we need to bring it into schools. I mean, that makes me really nervous. Yeah. I mean,
sure.
Think about different corporations and ads, and we already saw what happened with that with vending machines and soft drinks. Look at the rates of obesity in our country.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, that's interesting.
Linked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, we need to explore creative ideas to make the system better. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And I think everything needs to be on the table. I think as long as we have teachers at the table with parents and community members and business people, but we've got to hear the teacher voice. A lot of times there's politicians and people talking about teaching who have never set foot in a classroom as an adult. I think that's really got to change. I think it's really easy to think you're an expert in education just based on the fact that you went to school. But things have changed since we went to school tremendously. I feel like every year I'm teaching, there's so much to learn and to try to integrate into my classroom on a regular basis that we can't just rely on that old way of thinking. I think we've got to make sure that teachers are at the table.
Katie, how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more or reach out to you in one way, shape, or form with some questions?
Absolutely. My website is whygreatteachersquit.com. There's a contact link there. I also just began katiefarber.com, and there's a link to my email as well.
Terrific. Well, I want to thank you so much for, of course, writing the book for starters and taking on this challenging task, but also thanks for being a guest on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real treat.
Sounds great, Katie. Thanks again for listening in, everyone. I hope your life is a little smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Thanks for listening in. Until next week, we'll see you then.